I will call the remote hearing of the Environment and Natural Resources Finance and Policy Committee to order. Today is February 23rd, 2021. This meeting is held in accordance with Rule 10.01, which was passed and allows for remote hearings. All remote hearings are recorded and live streamed by House Public Information. The clerk will take attendance by roll.
All right, Chair Hansen is present. Wasilewicz, Amy.
Wasilewicz present.
Wasilewicz present. Heintzeman, Josh.
Heintzeman present.
Heintzeman present. Acomb, Patty.
Acomb present.
Acomb present. Ackland, Susan.
Ackland present.
Ackland present. Becker, Jeff.
Becker present.
Becker present. Becker Finn, Jamie.
Present.
Becker Finn present. Ackland, Rob.
Present.
Ackland present. Fisher, Peter.
Fisher present.
Fisher present. Green, Steve.
Present.
Green present. Igo, Spencer.
Present.
Igo present. Jordan, Sydney.
Jordan present.
Jordan present. Keeler, Heather.
Keeler present.
Keeler present. Lee, Fu.
Lee present.
Lee present. Lippert, Todd.
Lippert present.
Lippert present. Lewick, Dale.
Lewick present.
Lewick present. Morrison, Kelly.
Morrison present.
Morrison present. Nelson, Nathan.
Present.
Nelson present. Tice, Tama.
Present.
Tice present, and a quorum is present.
Quorum is present. The next item on the agenda are the minutes for Thursday, February 18th, 2021. Representative Backer, have you looked over the minutes?
I would move those minutes. Yes, sir.
Representative Backer moves the minutes for February 18th, 2021. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, nay. Ayes have it. Representative Backer's motion to approve the minutes is approved. Members, the first bill up is House File 718 by Representative Vang, City Adoption of Pesticide Control Authorized. We have targeted about till 1:30 for this bill. I will move that House File 718 be recommended to be re-referred to the Agriculture and Finance Policy Committee. Representative Vang also has an author's amendment. I will move the A21-0034 amendment. Representative Vang, can you please explain your amendment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This amendment is pretty simple. It just adds the Metropolitan Mosquito Control District to the exemption of the bill.
Is there any discussion on the amendment, on the author's amendment? All those in favor say aye.
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 All those opposed say nay. Ayes have it. The amendment is adopted. Representative Vang, to your bill as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. House File 718 is a bill that reflects what Minnesotans want when we think about our outdoors, fresh air, fresh smells, beautiful scenery, and although this doesn't come to mind immediately, but requires it chemical-free. So this bill adds a narrow exception that if a city passes an ordinance, it can tell its residents that they cannot use the pesticides that are on a list maintained by the Department of Agriculture. As Minnesotans, we pride ourselves in our outdoors as the land of 10,000 lakes. Our deers, birds, and fish are all part of who we are. This bill will help migrating birds. About 74% of bird species in North America rely on farm belt habitat, has suffered population decline since 1966. Science tells us that migrating songbirds exposed to very small amounts of neonicotinoid pesticides will have weight loss and migration delays. Both reduce their chance of surviving. This bill will help fish. Science also tells us that neonics have had a widespread negative impact on aquatic insects and invertebrates. Both are for food for fish. This bill will also help deer. Recent science tells us that neonics are a likely cause of birth defects in deer and are found in spleens and reproductive organs of deer. And this bill will help mayflies. They are particularly susceptible to neonics. Since 2012, mayfly populations have declined by 52% in the northern Mississippi River Basin. Mayflies are, of course, food for a wide variety of species, from freshwater fish to birds and bats. And one more thing, LCCMR funded a butterfly survey to see how they are doing in Minnesota. Of the 13 native butterflies surveyed, they could not find 7 of the native butterflies on sites. So I hope you will vote for this bill that provides a safe place for bees and butterflies and pollinators and all sorts of other critters that make our great outdoors the place we want it to be. And with that, Mr. Chair, I do have testifiers here today who would like to speak in support of the bill.
Thank you, Representative Vang. Chris Cowan, Pesticide Action Network.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You can hear me okay?
Yes, proceed. State your name and who you're with for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, for allowing me to speak today. My name is Chris Cowan, and I'm speaking today on behalf of the Pesticide Action Network. The language this bill is impacting has been around since 1987. And what has changed since then? Well, the answer is a lot. The introduction of neonicotinoids is just one example. In 1987, they hardly existed. Neonics are now and have been for many years among the most, if not the most, widely used class of insecticides in the world. This despite the fact that some of the most widely used neonics are banned from use in the European Union. But here in the U.S., one could say that neonics are found just about everywhere. I'll give a couple examples. In 2015, a study by the American Bird Conservancy and the Harvard Chan School of Public Health found bird and bee-killing insecticides in nearly every food item eaten by the nation's senators, representatives, and others who dine in the cafeterias of the U.S. Congress. Here in Minnesota, surface water monitoring results for 2019 conducted by the Department of Agriculture found the 3 most commonly detected pesticide compounds were detected in 67 to 85% of the samples collected. The MDA monitoring results from 2010 to 2019 indicate that 2 neonics detected in several state rivers and streams approached or exceeded the EPA's updated aquatic life benchmarks for these pesticides. Three of these insecticides are now designated as surface water pesticides of concern by the Commissioner of Agriculture. Meanwhile, insecticide resistance is an ongoing concern. And sometimes the answer is just not another mode of action. Some folks want to get off the insecticide treadmill. Even the chief author of the 1987 language has signed a letter of support for House File 718. Let at least some Minnesotans have the option to choose local control that is enjoyed by all residents of several other states, and let these folks have just a small degree of predictable and easy to manage local control over pesticides. For pesticides, the federal law is the floor, but in Minnesota, pesticide law is a low ceiling when it too should be the floor. Say yes to good choices and say yes to House File 718. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Thank you. Holly Jenkins, Wilderness in the City.
Hi, can you hear me okay?
Yes, proceed. Okay, thank you, state your name for the record.
I'm Holly Jenkins, Director of Wilderness in the City. We are a nonprofit whose mission is to preserve and enhance natural urban areas for future generations of people and wildlife. And we are also a leading partner in the Legacy of Nature Alliance, which is a recently established coalition of organizations from across the metro striving to improve ecosystems throughout our region. So thank you for the opportunity to comment on House File 718. As you know, our pollinator crisis is a real threat to all of us, and therefore we all need to be part of the solution. Towards that end, we are working to increase pollinator-friendly habitat throughout the metro regional park system, but we are not stopping there. Our backyards, our schoolyards, our soccer fields and city parks, government and other public campuses, there is no limit to the opportunities in our local communities to increase healthy habitat needed to repair the pollinator crises we have created. Additionally, pesticide use can contaminate birds and other wildlife already suffering from such a lack of high quality habitat. Our water, our land, and our food sources are all impacted by pesticide use. This is why the use of pesticides must be more closely monitored throughout our local communities. By allowing our neighborhoods and cities to make educated and thoughtful choices, we will have a healthier environment and healthier lifestyles. But currently we are restricted due to Minnesota's pesticide preemption law. Now consider that our local levels of government regularly make decisions that impact the quality of life in our communities every day, and pesticide use falls into that category. So this is truly about quality of life, and our local governments are best suited to respond to what is best for our communities. That's why I urge you to support House File 718. Thank you.
Thank you. Whitney Place, Minnesota Department of Agriculture.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Whitney Place. I serve as Assistant Commissioner at the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. The Department of Agriculture is still evaluating House File 718 as it moves through the committee process. We do have a couple questions about the logistics of implementing this bill as written and how state or city jurisdictions of pesticide regulations will be managed. Here are some considerations that should be made. First, if a city can establish an ordinance, it will be difficult to manage all of the regulatory requirements across the state. So if there are several ordinances passed in several different cities, we'd likely need additional resources to manage that delegation of that authority. Second, this bill doesn't preclude MDA from using our authority, but adds authority to the city for certain chemicals. This could create difficulty if there was a misuse issue in terms of who is in charge of the investigation and how enforcement would be applied according to the ordinances of each city. Finally, there may be cases where a chemical on the pollinator lethal list that is to be managed by our agency would be necessary that are not included in this bill. For example, if there was like a wasp nest or other pest situation in a yard in a city with an ordinance like this, we would also be concerned about limiting the use of pesticides that control our invasive species, most prominently emerald ash borer. In the past, it has been difficult to determine how delegation of any pesticide authority would work, as we have been unable to get definitive answers from the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency. In a situation like this, cities with this enforcement authority may need to develop cooperative agreements with EPA. We are encouraged that we've been recently contacted by the new EPA Region 5 coordinator, and we're hopeful that we'll have a good working relationship with them on pesticide regulations in Minnesota moving forward. We plan to have continued conversations with Representative Vang about this bill and appreciate her attention to this issue. Thank you.
Thank you. Craig Johnson, League of Cities, League of Minnesota Cities.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Craig Johnson with the League of Minnesota Cities. Very much appreciate Representative Bang bringing this issue forward. The League has looked at this in the past and is supportive of House File 718 and the 821 amendment adopted. We do appreciate that this allows cities whose communities have determined this is a priority to have a way to see that addressed through community action and through the use of their own local controls. We also value the fact that Minnesota's Department of Agriculture will be the one putting together the list of what chemicals are affected, so that cities are not left on their own to determine which ones fall under that category and which ones don't. That would expose cities to a lot of scrutiny, confusion, and potential litigation. So appreciate that the state steps in to fulfill that role. We also do appreciate the need for exceptions like the one created with the 821 amendment, and some of the exception ideas listed by the Department of Agriculture seem to be reasonable things that we can look at as the bill moves forward to make sure that we're appropriately allowing for these compounds to be used where they're necessary for public health, safety, and management of tree disease, for example, with the EAB mentioned, but also still allow cities to prevent the use of these if they feel that the pollinator impacts are too stringent for what they want to see in their communities. So appreciate the time, Mr. Chair and members, and do support House File 718. We'll work with the author and the agency moving forward to address concerns with it.
Thank you. And we also have available for questions Stephen Manweiler with the Metropolitan Mosquito Control District and Darren McBeth. I don't know if they were going to, maybe they're just on deck in case there are any questions. Representative Lewick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess this is a question for both the Department of Ag and
the League of Minnesota Cities. Obviously, nothing's free, so we're talking about the potential for a substantial amount of cost to be borne by someone. And it's not clear to me how the League of Minnesota Cities, for example, or how cities are going to pay for what they're going to be drawing out of the Department of Agriculture, and how are we going to fund the Department of Agriculture, and who should fund the Department of Agriculture for something that would appear to be a very property tax related issue within that local unit of government. So I'd like to hear from both both Department of Ag and League of Minnesota Cities as to how do you plan to split the baby on this relative to who's going to pay for what, particularly who's responsible, and how do we deal with that?
Ms. Place, Commissioner, or Mr. Johnson, who wants to go first? Mr. Johnson raises his hand, so you're the winner. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Someone has to start responding to the good questions, so I'll take the first shot. So, Mr. Chair, the Department of Agriculture has a responsibility to all the residents of the state of Minnesota. This would be in keeping with the responsibilities they have over pesticides in the state. So we don't feel that cities are asking for any additional attention or support. We are asking for the authority to have a local ordinance. And the state's real main priority here is to come up with the list of which pesticides qualify for that list. Cities still would have to have the ordinance, enact the ordinance, and enforce the ordinance, which is done the same way we enforce any of our ordinances with our local staff, and the city would have to make a determination that they are ready to put those resources into it if they're going to enact such an ordinance.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Vang.
I can speak to a little bit about the cost to the state. Fiscal note was requested and just got done. And what they revealed was that the cost will be minimal and can be absorbed by the Department of Agriculture. The main part of what that cost will be is just reviewing, maintaining the pesticide list and reviewing, having staff review those labels. So currently the cost is very minimal.
Representative Lewick, was that the answer to your question?
Well, I find it hard to, when we quant, you know, the words cost minimal, I would like to see a little more detail on that, and probably going to take a deeper look by the Department of Agriculture, because rarely do we do anything where the costs are minimal. So
I think Commissioner Place may want to
I'd like to hear a little more detail on that.
Mr. Chair and Representative Lewick, thank you for the question. There would be a cost to this, and we have it outlined in the fiscal note, mostly for reviewing of the list. And, you know, I don't think that we would say that the cost could be absorbed by the department. We would certainly have to figure out a funding mechanism to make sure that we could manage this list.
Well, thank you. That puts a point on the basis of my question. The local property tax owners in a municipality have a responsibility to foot the bill for things that they're asking in addition that the rest of the citizens haven't asked for. So, that at least points out that what program you're going to shut down the Department of Ag to take the money away from and put into this new program unless somebody comes up with a new way to fund this. So, but anyway, yeah, we'll have, that's got to be explored in great detail. I mean, I've got no issue with making sure we use pesticides and herbicides in a responsible manner, but I want to make sure that we put the responsibility with the unit of government that is asking for this and not put it across the entire rest of the state.
Hey, we've got a couple other questions. I should note that the statute that allows for the delegation was passed into law in 1987. Representative Heinzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And I'm glad that Commissioner Place is right there. I'm just going to quickly ask, you know, it sounded like there were some concerns that you were mentioning. Well, I'll just be real direct. Does the Department of Agriculture, are you supporting this, Commissioner, or is this as written, or is there changes that we need to be specifically focusing on to make sure that this thing works for the people of Minnesota?
Commissioner Place.
Mr. Chair, Representative Heintzman, as I said, we are looking to continue conversations with the author. I don't think as written, we would support this bill, but we're open to having this discussion and talking about some of our concerns and implementation.
Okay. Representative Becker Finn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and hopefully this is a quick answer from the bill author. But just to clarify, this bill is not requiring cities to do any of this. This would be if elected city officials decide that this makes sense for their communities, that they would be able to have this as an option for their cities. Is that accurate?
Representative Vang.
Yes, that's correct.
Representative Becker Finn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to make that point. I think that, you know, this wouldn't just be every city across the state instituting this type of these type of rules for their cities. And I know my city faces problems with emerald ash borer, and I know that you know, making sure that we can still use those products as necessary has been contemplated. And so I appreciate the chief author continuing to work with folks to make sure that the bill does what we all want it to do. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Maybe to the bill author or maybe Mr. Johnson too, did the cities actually request this bill?
Representative Vang.
Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Green, for the question. That this has been worked on through various stakeholders, from the testifiers to and the cities have also have grown interest in this bill as well. And perhaps my testifier, Mr. Johnson, can elaborate more on that too.
Mr. Johnson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Green, we did not request that the author introduce this bill or draft this bill. We have supported similar language in the past that was introduced, and the Board of Directors of the League of Minnesota City, on behalf of our members this last year, adopted a policy that specifically supports the concepts of this legislation, which is a little bit rare. We normally have more generalized statements, but this one was actually specified as an authority that a number of cities across the state are interested in having created. So did not ask for the bill to be authored, but we do fully support the bill.
Representative Lee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, you know, to that point, I just want to say thank you to Representative Vang for bringing this forward. You have definitely heard from the different Minnesotans from across the state and bringing this forward. And you know, Mr. Johnson said it, that we are hearing from our local units of government in support of this, and those are local elected officials. And so I think that this is a great bill, and, you know, this allow for, you know, those cities that do want to adopt this to really move forward with this. And so I just want to say thank you for bringing it forward.
And members, this is going to the Ag Committee. I want to point out why it's here. This is the Environment Policy and Natural Resources Committee. Representative Vang talked about the environmental impacts of the pollinator lethal insecticides. And she did reference, you know, not only pollinators, but also fish and game and water quality and other wildlife. I know Commissioner Meyer is on the line. I actually have a question for him about research that was done on neonicotinoid pesticides in deer spleens. And I think Representative Vang had referenced a study in South Dakota. But if Commissioner Meyer could please give an update on what happened or what's happening with the DNR study from 2019.
Mr. Chairman, members, Bob Meyer, Assistant Commissioner, Department of Natural Resources.
We are still in the process of validating those test results. We look forward to communicating with you soon once those results are validated.
Thank you, Commissioner Meyer. I think it's important to get those results out because I think Minnesotans can handle the results. Getting them out would be important. Representative Heintzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just one final question. Does the bill author have any idea what kind of volume at which these chemicals are being applied in municipalities around the state? How big of a problem is this? And do you have any data to confirm one way or the other?
Representative Vang.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm assuming the problem you're referencing is the amount of pesticide that's used to harm pollinators and how widespread that is.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Thank you.
I'm not an expert in that. I hope maybe I can defer to my testifiers who has the expertise or the scientific evidence to say how much of the impact pesticides are hurting pollinators. What I do know is there have been many studies that have shown that pollinators are dying at a rapid rate. I don't have the scientific background to give you a complete answer, and so I will defer that to my testifiers.
Any of the testifiers want to take that?
Mr. Chair?
Mr. Cowan?
Yes, I don't have exact numbers in front of me, but I think it's safe to say in general, and I can get some documentation for Representative Heitzman, but pesticide use cosmetically in residential settings is generally I guess the word would be more intense, more concentrated than the use in agriculture. Overall, the agricultural use is greater than cosmetic residential use, but it's safe to say that where residential use is employed, that there's more density or more amount per acre.
Representative Heintzman, let me try asking that a different way of the Department of Ag that might be able to help with that. Commissioner Place, the department has a responsibility for evaluating pesticide use. Has the department done any surveys or studies on pesticide use? And would, under the preemption law, would cities be preempted from actually doing a survey or a study on pesticide use?
Mr. Chair, so I think the relevant information that we would be able to answer this question with would be our pesticide sales data. And I do apologize, I don't have that in front of me, but I'm happy to share that with you, Representative Heintzman, and with the committee. In terms of research, no, I don't think our preemption laws preclude any sort of survey or research being done by local governments.
Representative Heintzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, you and I both serve on the LCCMR, and, this might be something for the smart folks out there to take a closer look at and actually get some hard numbers and find out where we're at. We have a lot of research that's looking at ag specifically, and, you know, this might be something that would be, you know, important to actually figure out. And maybe that might be, you know, sort of putting the order of this thing in better perspective. If we had an idea how much that, I don't think it precludes the author from bringing the bill. I think it is something that we absolutely have to consider here in the legislature, but it'd be great to have some data to really give us a sense of how big a problem it is and how widespread. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Heintzman. That's a good reminder that all members will get the link out for the request for proposals to encourage people to apply. And it would be also awesome if we could actually pass those two LCCMR bills as well. So, Representative Vang, I don't see any other questions. I do want to note there are a number of written testimony. There is a number of written testimony letters that have been posted on the committee website for the committee and for the general public. Representative Vang, would you like to give final comments?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to add that, you know, pollinators need habitat that is free of pesticides and has lots of flowering plants that have food for them. Cities could be that critical habitat. So we have a huge opportunity in Minnesota to save pollinators like the rusty patch bumblebee and others. And our biggest cities are part of the Mississippi Flyway. So it's an opportunity for us. And I would like to ask for the committee member's support. Thank you.
I will renew my motion that House File 718 as amended be recommended to be re-referred to the Agriculture, Finance, and Policy Committee. The clerk will take the roll.
Hanson, Rick.
Hanson, Rick, aye.
Hanson, aye. Wasilewicz, Amy.
Wasilewicz, aye.
Wasilewicz, aye. Heitzman, Josh.
Heitzman, aye.
Heitzman, aye. Acom, Patty.
Acom, aye.
Acom, aye. Ackland, Susan.
Ackland, aye.
Ackland, aye. Backer, Jeff.
Backer, no.
Backer, no. Becker Finn, Jamie.
Aye.
Becker Finn, aye. Eklund, Rob.
Aye.
Eklund, aye. Fisher, Peter.
Fisher, aye.
Fisher, aye. Green, Steve.
No.
Green, no. Igo, Spencer.
Igo, aye.
Igo, aye. Jordan, Sydney.
Jordan, aye.
Jordan, aye. Keeler, Heather.
Keeler, aye.
Keeler, aye. Lee, Fu.
Lee, aye.
Lee, aye. Lippert, Todd.
Lippert, aye.
Lippert, aye. Lewick, Dale.
Lewick, aye.
Lewick, aye. Morrison, Kelly.
Morrison, aye.
Morrison, aye. Nelson, Nathan.
Nelson, aye.
Nelson, aye. Tice, Tama.
Tice, aye.
Tice, aye. That is 17 ayes and 2 noes.
Congratulations, Representative Vang. You're on your way to the Ag Committee. The motion prevails. House File 157, Fisher, lead tackle sale, manufacture, and use prohibited. We're estimating about 20 minutes for this bill. Representative Fisher, will you move that House File 157 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I'd like to move to have 157 laid over as possible inclusion for the environment bill.
Representative Fisher, to your bill.
Thank you, Chair Hanson. House File 157 is a very slimmed down, simple bill. It would allow us to ban the sale and use of lead tackle in the state. For those who are using lead tackle, it would become effective July 1st of 2025. For those who are manufacturing lead tackle, they would be prohibited from manufacturing lead tackle after July 1st of 2024. So this bill does provide some lead time so that people would be able to adjust to it. This bill was originally an item that came to me several years ago. I was at the Water Resources Conference that the University of Minnesota puts on every year, and there was a group of Girl Scouts putting on a poster board presentation about the impacts of lead on wildlife, specifically around swans and how many swans were dying from lead poisoning because of lead tackle. And that's where the bill came forward. They were saying, we were asking what more could happen, and they said, well, it'd be nice to get them banned here in the state. And so that's where the bill idea came from. These Girl Scouts are in my local district here, and as we were taking a look at it, one of the things they pointed out is that lead sinkers usually cost between 10 to 25 cents, and some of the replacements out there are actually cheaper than the lead sinkers. Replacements are between 7 cents and 65 cents. I do have several testifiers here. I'd first like to go to my first testifiers, Tracy and Addie Schimmick, who are with the Girl Scout troop, who originally educated me on this issue at the Water Resources Conference. If we could go ahead, Mr. Chair.
Would Tracy and Addie Schimmick come forward, please?
Thank you, Chair Hanson. Go ahead. Hello, Chair Hanson and members of the committee. Thank you for allowing me to speak today about why I support House File 157. My name is Addie Schimmick, and I'm a member of the Girl Scout Troop 56087. Our troop last year worked to raise awareness that lead tackle is harmful to our wildlife, and we had hoped legislation would be passed so that it was no longer allowed in Minnesota. When our troop was deciding how we could make a positive impact on our community for a silver award, we noticed the high death rate of swans at a local channel called Sucker Lake. They were dying because of lead sinkers. We all agreed that not only was this an important problem to us and the community, there was an easy solution, no longer using lead tackle. Personally, I wanted to address this issue because I find a lot of peace being in nature and watching animals.
I go fishing a lot with friends and family, and finding out that I may have been responsible for some of this damage or may have further caused this damage really upset me. I wasn't aware of that, and I'm pretty sure many others aren't either. Something that is so detrimental to the environment, and specifically trumpeter swans and my local community, shouldn't be allowed because so many people don't know what it can do. Our troop has worked to raise awareness of the issue by writing letters to editors, creating a video about lead being bad for swans, and helping Don Tanner from Glamo talk about the issue at a water resources conference. At the conference, we met Representative Peter Fisher, and who agreed to create legislation to ban lead sinkers. While raising awareness about the issue, how the issue is important, and hopefully making an impact, I feel the only way to truly eliminate the risk of death, further death in the environment, is to ban the use and creation of lead sinkers in Minnesota. Many people will assume it's safe to buy because Minnesota in the past has had a track record of making things safe to buy and having lead sinkers readily available in many stores probably does ease their concerns, and they may not know any better. Thank you for your time today, and I hope you will support this legislation to ensure swans, loons, and other wildlife are around when I have kids and when my kids have kids.
Thank you. I generally go through all the testifiers, but I see that Representative Keeler has a question, so I'm going to go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's not a question. Addie, you did a great job. As a former Girl Scout, it's always great when our youth comes up with ideas. It's more than just seeing a problem. You actively work to make a difference in our community and across our state and for the next generations. I'm so proud of you. I just wanted to make sure that you knew that you did a phenomenal job.
Good job. Thank you. Don Tanner, Vlamo, did I say that right? The Badness Lake Area Water Management Organization, Vlamo.
Yep, and I want to thank Addie and Tracy for being here today too and for working with me on this issue. They've really inspired me and been such a pleasure to work with. My name is Don Tanner. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak today. I'm the Program Development Coordinator for the Badness Lake Area Water Management Organization. I've been working on the issue of lead poisoning in trumpeter swans since 2019. In 2019, I was notified by a resident, Debbie Hartman, who's a local photographer who really enjoys photographing the swans at the channel in the winter. She was finding dead swans on the bank and in the water and wondered what might be happening to them. At that time, I began monitoring the channel and bringing dead swans to the Veterinary Diagnostic Clinic at the University of Minnesota with partnership from the DNR. I've continued to monitor the site and respond to notifications from residents. So far, we've documented 20 dead trumpeter swans at the channel. That includes 4 this year. The most recent dead swan that I brought in for testing was last Thursday, February 18th. We had been monitoring this adult's condition. It was exhibiting signs of lead poisoning that included weight loss, tremors, and difficulty grooming. We were not able to reach it while it was still alive to bring it to the wildlife rehab clinic. The open water and thin ice make for dangerous conditions at the channel, and it's difficult to attempt a rescue. It's also sometimes not possible to collect dead swans. 10 swans collected at the channel have been tested so far. All of those have been confirmed to have died of lead poisoning. Dead swans that we are unable to reach are a poison carcass for animals that might feed on them. Also, with lead incorporated into their tissues and dying on the water, the lead that kills these swans is contributed directly back into our drinking water when we are unable to retrieve them. People are really fond of the swans, and the channel is a popular place to watch them. When I'm monitoring the channel, I talk with people who are there to observe the swans. Many people are surprised that lead is still being used at all. If they're not active hunters and anglers, people assume lead was phased out years ago. They demonstrate shock about the situation and concern for the swans. Alternatives to lead sinkers and tackle are available. During previous efforts to phase out lead, many of these options were not widely available. They are more widely so, but people have not made a sufficient voluntary switch to non-lead options. I believe legislation is needed to make an effective switch. This should not be a partisan issue. The Department of Health has revised guidelines to state that no level of lead is recommended for humans. Lead sinkers that are being voluntarily deposited into our water and killing wildlife are also going into the reservoir for drinking water for the city of St. Paul and surrounding communities. I thank you so much in advance for supporting HF-157, helping to expand non-toxic tackle availability, continuing to provide education about this issue to Minnesota residents, and making our environment as safe as possible for humans, swans, and other wildlife. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee.
Thank you. Carol Henderson.
Yes, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, can you hear me okay?
Yes, state your name and who you're with for the record.
Yes, my name is Carol Henderson, and I appreciate the opportunity to testify in support of HF-157. I strongly support this proposal and feel it is long overdue. I served as the Minnesota DNR Non-Game Wildlife Program Supervisor from 1977 through 2018 and was involved with research, management, and education activities related to lead poisoning in Canada geese, bald eagles, common loons, and trumpeter swans. I now serve on the boards of the National Loon Center and the Trumpeter Swan Society. We have seen a significant increase in the awareness of wildlife-related problems created by lead as an environmental pollutant over the past 30 years. However, the use of lead in fishing sinkers and jigs continues to poison some of Minnesota's most iconic wildlife, including loons, trumpeter swans, and bald eagles. This problem has already been addressed by passage of restrictive legislation in New Hampshire, New York, Maine, Massachusetts, Vermont, and Washington. New York passed its legislation in 2004, 17 years ago. In general, these states prohibit use, manufacture, and sale of small jigs and sinkers under 1 ounce and less than 2.5 inches long. So we're following in their lead. Water birds are poisoned by lost fishing tackle. When lead jigs and sinkers fall to the lake bottom, they retain their toxic qualities indefinitely. Loons, swans, ducks, and geese dive to the bottom of lakes to pick up pebbles that they retain in their gizzards to grind up their food. If they accidentally swallow even one split shot or jig, they die. These are pebbles from the gizzard of a dead loon that was turned in to the DNR. And you can see they are about the size of jigs and sinkers that we use for common fishing and often under 1 ounce in weight if they're lead. But these are the types of gizzard contents that cause the birds to dive regularly, pick them up, and if they get one split shot or jig, they die. Loons also get lead poisoning by ingesting fish that are carrying lead tackle and by swallowing fishing jigs that are being retrieved by anglers. In the non-game wildlife program, we received about 25 to 30 dead loons per year and gave them necropsies to determine the cause of death. Lead poisoning is one of the top three causes of loon mortality. Lead poisoning caused by fishing tackle is a cumulative problem. More lead is added to our lake bottoms every year. If we treasure our lakes, we should not be treating them as perpetual dumping grounds for lead fishing tackle. In Minnesota, PCA has an outstanding Get the Lead Out program underway. Its website has lots of great information about lead-free fishing, including a list of 65 manufacturers that exclusively offer non-toxic fishing tackle, fishing jigs, and sinkers. This is a huge new green manufacturing and marketing opportunity for businesses to demonstrate their commitment for preserving our fishing traditions while protecting our wildlife. One of the most serious difficulties to get buy-in for this non-toxic tackle is a doom loop marketing phenomenon. Anglers who go to a bait shop and request non-toxic tackle are frequently told there's no demand, so we don't carry it, or the sales clerk doesn't know if they carry it, or if so, they don't know where it is. Manufacturers are coming out with a greater variety and volume of really interesting and desirable fishing non-toxic tackle, but retailers have not done an adequate job of either carrying it or promoting it. They don't understand that all Minnesotans have a stake in protecting our loons, including anglers. And we have a lot of anglers, 1.4 million. We have to reach a lot of people. They need big signs in those stores saying loon safe and swan safe above a designated non-toxic fishing tackle display. Perhaps the MPCA could copyright a loon safe logo that could be approved for use on logos and advertising for non-toxic tackle packaging. We are desperately in need of coordination and collaboration among manufacturers, retailers, anglers, and angling groups. But it hasn't happened in 20 years. Frankly, we need HF-157 to make it happen. It is worth recalling that there was a lot of heartburn by waterfowl hunters in 1987 when Minnesota began requiring non-toxic shot for all waterfowl hunting in the state. While there were early issues with performance and steel shot, The animal industry has developed outstanding non-toxic loads for waterfowl hunting, and hunters have adapted well to those non-toxic alternatives. And many, like myself, also use them for upland hunting as well, because they work very well. It was the right thing to do. Now anglers have a chance to do the right thing. They have an opportunity to demonstrate that they care about all wildlife as they enjoy their fishing adventures. Many anglers practice catch and release to demonstrate their conservation ethic. But for loons, swans, and eagles with lead poisoning, there's no catch and release. They eat lead and they die. HF-157 is a targeted solution to this problem. It has already been proven in other states. It only applies to smaller jigs and sinkers, and it allows 3 to 4 years to be phased in. If we don't get this legislation passed now, our doom loop could continue for many years. Thank you in advance for your support of HF-157. I think Minnesota's citizens would appreciate your support for protecting our state bird, the common loon. This legislation would not impair the opportunity for enjoying our fishing heritage. Loons are a treasure worth protecting, and they're much more beautiful on our lakes than an upside down loon on a necropsy table. Thank you.
Thank you. And we have available for questions staff from the MPCA and the DNR. And I should note, again, there are written comments and testimony provided for and against posted on our website. Representative Heinzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just going to quickly thank Carol Henderson for being here today. Obviously, we've had lots of conversations, Carol, about the Loon Center and about how important their programming around getting the lead out and the buyback programs and the MPCA's work is absolutely critical, and we're very thankful for all those things. I do have some questions about the bill, and I'm hoping that either the bill author or a testifier might be able to help me out. Line 1.8 to start and 1.9, a jig means a weighted hook. Jig does not include lead fishing related items, including but not limited to fishing line, flies, lures, or spoons. What are we talking about here? Because I know a lot of fishermen. I happen to have one of those boxes full of jigs. It cost me about $500 for all of the jigs that are included. And I'm wondering, what are we talking about here? A weighted hook versus a jig, like what I think Carol was talking about just a second ago. I'm hoping that somebody can help me understand the language here. And if we're actually excluding in this particular bill an actual jig, because there is a difference between a weighted hook and a jig.
Representative Fisher?
I may need a little help on this one, as I'm not quite as familiar with all the fishing lore as some other folks are. But when I've used weighted hooks in the past, they've usually been, there's a little wet, like a little ball that looks like is on the hook. And what it's my understanding is it's trying to make sure that that is called out and taken out of the process. But I would also like to open it up to those who are more experienced in this area.
Commissioner Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, members, could you repeat the specific question?
I can do that, Mr. Chair.
Representative Heinzman.
So I'm looking at line 0.18 and 1.9. Commissioner, it specifically says a jig means a weighted hook. And I know what a weighted hook is. And unfortunately, I think the bill author has probably got a problem here, because a weighted hook is different, and it's specifically describing in 1.9 a lure that contains lead is not included in the prohibition. So I'm trying to get a definition, because a jig is definitely different than a weighted hook.
Mr. Meyer.
Chairman, members, I am not an expert on terms. I would refer to language about customary uses and phrases in Minnesota statutes. And then you would look at Webster's dictionary to see what a weighted hook would mean. I can see the confusion where if I have a sunfish rig with a slip bobber and a split shot and a hook on there, is that considered a weighted hook or not? So perhaps the author may consider defining the terms in the bill as the best way to deal with that.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Heinzman.
I have a follow-up question, if that's okay, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, I think Representative Becker Finn had a solution for you, but maybe on that particular one. But
thank you, Mr. Chair. I think we're going to need a solution there. I'm also curious, on lines 1.13 on a prohibition, a person may not use, and then it goes through the description and the definitions that we just were describing, to take or to fish. So I'm wondering, that sounds like we're looking at a prohibition that would eliminate the use of these. What would be the penalties? I'm looking to just try to figure out what folks would be looking at in terms of penalty if they're using these particular weighted hooks, which I think that's going to need to be changed. But then also sales prohibited. So it says a person may not, and this is line 2.7, a person may not offer for sale or sell any sinker or jig, and it goes on. I mean, does that mean a garage sale could be affected by this? I'm not totally clear on how sales might be affected and what the penalties might be.
Ms. Taylor, would you have what the default is to this section of law in terms of enforcement penalty?
Mr. Chair, members, on the 97C, I think it recently got changed, but I think it's just a misdemeanor. And then on the 3025E, I'd have to look into that because that's not an area of law that I do a lot of, but I could get back to that. Committee.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Heintzman.
Just a comment. You know, I think that what we're trying to get at here, this bill has great intentions. I think that unfortunately it has some pretty significant technical issues. So I hope that those things can get worked out. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
It is being laid over, members, and so there's an opportunity if people have input on how to make the bill better. That would be awesome, and they could work with the author. I'm going to go. I know Representative Becker Finn, I think, has a solution, but Representative Jordan was first, so I'm going to go with Representative Jordan, then Representative Igo, and then Representative Becker Finn. And then Representative Heintzman, your hand is up again, but let's go Jordan, Becker Finn, or Jordan, Igo, Becker Finn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm happy to yield to Representative Becker Finn if you think that would be better, or I could ask my question now. Mr. Chair, you're on mute, and I'm not.
Why don't all three of you ask your question, and that'll help save us some time we could have. So go ahead.
Well, first of all, I really wanted to commend Ms. Schimmick for your testimony. I think you really did the Girl Scouts proud, and as a former Girl Scout, I know you really upheld the Girl Scout law and our Girl Scout rule. So thank you so much for your testimony and for bringing this before this committee. It means a lot. My question is actually for the MPCA. I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about the human health impacts of drinking water contaminated with lead and if you see a connection to this bill at all.
Representative Igo.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So my question is kind of going off of Representative Heintzman was saying, and it starts with, so what would be the penalties, right? But how do we actually enforce that? And I just want to go out and say, I have 1,100 lakes in the county that I live, and just about every single one of my constituents fishes and owns a boat. So when we start looking at enforcement, are we going to start having our DNR officials, or are we going to start having our conservation officials looking into this? What do we start recruiting our county sheriffs? Because I can go in about just about every single boat that's in my county and in my district, and I'm going to find one of these hooks that's now going to be banned. So, and apart from that, my big concern is the cost. I'm really afraid of what it's going to do to people who can't maybe afford the new tackle. For instance, a half-ounce sinker that you would be able to buy with lead is about 36 to 42 cents, whereas the tungsten affiliate is about $2.60 for one. That's really concerning to some of my constituents who fishing is a way of life for them. I have many guides and outfitters. So I just have a lot of questions about this bill. I think there's some good ideas we need to address, but we really need to think about the long term here and how it's going to affect our outstate communities. Thank you.
Representative Becker Finn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think maybe we're up to seven or eight things now, Representative Heintzman, that we may agree on. I also agree that there is a difference between a weighted hook and a jig. And given that we're laying this over, I don't think an oral amendment is necessary, but I will commit to working with Representative Fisher to make sure that we clear up exactly what we're talking about, because there is a difference. And I think the intention was to include both of those items. And so I will work with Representative Fisher to get that cleaned up. And I just wanted to, again, thank Representative Fisher for bringing this forward. This is really important. You know, we as a country, we banned lead in paint back in 1978 in acknowledgement of, you know, in gasoline. We know how toxic it is, and it's sort of incredible that we've just normalized the use of lead in things that we eat, for those of us who hunt and fish. And so I think this is long overdue, and part of the enforcement questions, the important part I think will be in our businesses and manufacturers finally pushing them over into the sort of this, we've had this chicken or the egg problem that Mr. Henderson noted, that if I go into my local sporting goods store and I ask for non-toxic lead or, non-toxic tackle, nobody buys it. Well, but I would buy it if you have, it's this back and forth. And what we need to do is sort of put the pressure on the manufacturers and our sporting goods places to offer us those alternatives so that we can purchase it. So really glad to see this being heard today. And again, we'll work with Representative Fisher to make it even better.
It's the swan or the egg problem. Representative Lewick, and then Representative Igo, and then we still have Representative Jordan's question. So, Representative Lewick, quick.
Yeah, real quick. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would just ask that the author and folks that are looking at this also consider that there are folks out there that collect antique fishing gear, and so I'd be careful about just a blanket statement to forbid the sale of this stuff, because there is a group of people that spend a lot of time poring over old fishing tackle looking for that ancient piece, and a lot of it's going to have lead in it. So at least consider that in this lot of technical things we need to look at. Thank you.
Representative Igo.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just kind of a closing comment here, with working with the bill author, it just kind of hit me, we're talking about having to find solutions to lead. Well, maybe that solution is located in northeastern Minnesota with our ability to mine these precious resources. So maybe we could talk about adding mining into this bill to add new resources to the economy that would help to replace these lead sinkers. So maybe we could work on that in the future. Thank you.
A lot of work to do. So back to the PCA, to Representative Jordan's question, and maybe the DNR just on enforcement, noting that it has a 2025 implementation date. Mr. Westman.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Doug Wetstein, I'm the Industrial Division Director at the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. In general, the negative health effects of lead are well documented. The Minnesota Department of Health routinely tests municipal drinking water for lead levels. I think any specific adverse health effect questions would be best answered by them. And I'm certainly willing to take this question and talk to our counterparts, our contacts at the Department of Health, and get an answer back to the committee.
Representative Jordan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you for that answer. I think, we've talked a lot about lead on this committee. Protecting human health from the impacts of lead poisoning is a personal concern of mine, and I know it's a personal concern of Representative Lees as well, and I hope everyone on this committee is concerned about this. So I think it's really important that when we talk about our water and who's affected by lead contaminants, we're talking about the human health impacts as well, especially as we know that people do eat fish, people do drink water that come from this. So I'm hoping that we can talk about that as well going forward. Thank you.
Representative Heitzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I know we're already kind of on a course here, but I would suggest that we might look at potentially sending this bill to Commerce. It does modify Chapter 325E. I would make the suggestion that those issues would best be dealt with there. Just the minority making a suggestion. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Heintzman. I think we're gonna have a teamwork working on this, so hopefully make it a bipartisan bill and see what it looks like when it comes up again. Representative Fisher renews his motion that House File 157 be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill. The bill is laid over. Next bill up was supposed to start 10 minutes ago, but it's the chair's bill. Vice Chair Wozlawick, would you like to move? Would you like to take the gavel?
Yes, I will do that, Chair Hansen. Chair Hansen, would you like to move your bill?
I will move that House File 171 be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill.
Chair Hansen also has an author's amendment. Would you move the A1 amendment and explain it briefly?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I will move the A1 amendment. Members, this has been worked on for about a week, trying to get the fiscal note resolved and the fiscal questions. And I would like to have nonpartisan staff, Mr. Hagemeyer, just briefly explain why it's needed and what it is.
Sure, Mr. Chair. The A1 amendment addresses lines 2.10 to 2.12 in the bill. I think the board is looking for an appropriation of the funds in order to have access to additional resources when they need it. The bill as written didn't have an actual appropriation. It just said it may be allocated. So the A1 amendment addresses the situation or the type of expenditures that the additional money could be used for. And then line 1.10 of the amendment creates a statutory appropriation of up to 25% of the fund that could be used. So it limits to a degree how much of the fund Bowser could use for those purposes under potentially rare circumstances. I think that it wasn't intended to be used every year. In order to use the funds, they'd also have to work with MMB and to establish a process and criteria that they would be able to use the funds. And then once, if they do use any funds, they would have to report every 2 years how those funds were used. So it's kind of a way of creating the actual appropriation that the agency was looking for rarer circumstances where they need money beyond the 5% that's currently appropriated.
Thank you, Mr. Hagemeyer. So that is what's in the amendment. Representative Hansen moves the amendment to get the bill in the form the author wants. All those in favor of adding on the amendment?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? The amendment is adopted, and Representative Hansen, to your bill as amended.
This is a Board of Water and Soil Resources agency bill. I have Mr. Wyrens from the Board of Water and Soil Resources to present the bill. Mr. Wyrens.
Mr. Wyrens, if you want to identify yourself for the record, and then you can begin.
Mr. Chair, I'm not seeing Mr. Wyrens on the call anymore. Oh, period. Yeah, he's on. Is it, Mr. Wyrens, is your audio working?
It's a great bill relating to conservation easements, and it's going to be laid over.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, his mute is off, and obviously we're not hearing him. So Ms. Becker-Kadelka is on the call as well, I believe.
Ms. Becker-Kadelka.
Mr. Chair and members, Angie Becker-Kadelka, Assistant Director with the Board of Water and Soil Resources. Mr. Chair and members, House File 171, the Easement Stewardship Account Modification, provides updated language to the existing conservation easement stewardship accounts. It is budget neutral in that it does not appropriate any additional state resources for this fund. As a background, the state holds conservation and mitigation easements on private land. And this is, you know, as you all know, that we've come to the committee before with programs like the Minnesota Conservation Reserve and Enhancement Program. Bowser is required to record and manage these easements on behalf of the state, and they are usually permanent in duration. So the easement restricts certain landowner activities like new building development or row cropping agriculture. And this is done to ensure the public benefits of water quality and wildlife habitat. So back in 2015, Bowser was directed to create two statutorily prescribed investment accounts called stewardship accounts for the long-term conservation easement and wetland mitigation management. The State Board of Investment has the accounts and distributes 5% of the principal back to Bowser every year. So the issue is that these stewardship accounts only provide long-term funding for the costs associated with monitoring and contacts and records and storage management. But the missing element here is the ability to address structural and related problems that infrequently arise on these state-held Bowser-managed conservation easements. So the bill would really do two things. First, it would allow the agency to use the current annual 5% distribution also to address maintenance like hydrology and structural maintenance on associated easements. So if there's a big structure, let's say a big dam is in place to build this wetland, the dam needs to be maintained. It's going to be cheaper to maintain it than to wait till it blows out and then try to fix it. So that's the first thing. And then the second piece, which Mr. Hagemeyer shared the amendment, is to allow the agency to tap those additional stewardship account funds only when circumstances are such that a delay would otherwise result in adverse consequences. And so this would be, using the same example, if there's just going to be a structural failure, that this would be a time rather than having to build up that investment money over the course of years, is that if there should be a situation or a circumstance in which the agency needs to act soon, then that's when the agency would tap into these funds. So it does not alter the mechanism by which funds are placed into the account. It just broadens the use of the funds to ensure that the state's investment is protected. The additional amendment is what we've been working on over the past week, because we realize that we want to make sure that the sideboards are clear to everybody. And so that's what the amendment really does, is put the sideboards in place, which has the agency only doing these in situations or circumstances where there would be an adverse consequence, and having some of those criteria listed and named out, working in consultation with others, and making sure that there's a cap. And with that, Mr. Chair, I would stand for, or Madam Chair, I would stand for questions.
Thank you, Ms. Becker-Kadelka. And I did see Representative Heinzman with his hand up, but I put it down, so not sure. Representative Heinzman?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. I was trying to figure it out on my own, but I'm having a little bit of trouble. So I'll go to a different question. Maybe we'll get this other one figured out. The cost is kind of a strange sort of, I'll just get right to it. How does Bowser expect to spend, or how much does Bowser expect to spend on these new allowable activities? I understand the 5% from the accounts is being dropped back in, and that's, I think, the revenue neutral point. So maybe Angie could explain that a little bit better.
Ms. Becker-Kadelka?
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Heinzman. That is it's a really good question, and it isn't just straightforward. It's one of those things that I had to take a few times to restate it for myself, so I made sure I understood. The payment into the board State Board of Investment account happens at strategic times. So, for example, when Bowser acquires a conservation easement, $6,500 is taken from those funds, so be it the dedicated funding sources, and it's put into this account. And that $6,500 is to allow for the long-term management of that easement. So then every year, Bowser gets 5% back, or about $300. That's to handle landowner changes. It's to go do make sure that the account is still, or that the easement is still being maintained. It's to, you know, take a look at what's like what might be needing to be processed with landowner notices or approvals or amendments. It's all of those sorts of things, but it didn't, and I think this was missing back in 2015, it didn't allow for those structural fixes and those minor, you know, vegetation maintenance pieces on top of it. So the amount of money for a conservation easement does not change. It's still that $6,500, but that 5% that's distributed back to Bowser every year would be expanded to also include things like the structural repair and associated vegetation. So that's provision number one. And then the second piece of that is, in addition to that, should there be a time when a larger structural maintenance request is needed, rather than waiting until that builds up, waiting until that 5% each year builds up, it would allow the board to go into this account and handle a long-term imminent structural maintenance. That doesn't change that $6,500 that goes into the conservation easement account at the time of recording that easement. Did that answer the question?
Madam Chair.
Representative Heintzman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That helps a lot. It's a little bit it's a little bit more complicated than I think we usually see in some of these things, but you know, I'm glad we have that extra information. That'll help a lot, in Commissioner. So the last one was just, is there a chance that this new cost is going to take away from work you're already doing? There's so many things that your agency touches, and I just want to just confirm that if this extra responsibility is added, and I think you've been working on this, but I just want to confirm that. Thank you.
Ms. Baker-Kadalka?
Madam Chair and Representative Heintzman, you know, it's one of those components where the agency is always having to prioritize the resources, because the resources for management are always smaller than the possible possibilities to provide that management. And so in this case, if those management needs are expanded, then the agency just has to go through the same prioritization process that we do right now, which is to take the things that would provide the best public benefit and take those items that maybe have the biggest structural implication if they're not addressed.
All right, any further questions or discussion? I'm not seeing any other hands raised. Chair Hansen, any final remarks?
Sometimes bills are not all that exciting, but they are critical. And so I would encourage, this is an important bill, and I would encourage support when it comes out in the omnibus bill. I'd renew my motion, Madam Chair.
Representative Hansen renews his motion that House File 171 as amended be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill. The bill is laid over, and I will return the gavel to Chair Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and we'll move now to House File 934, Representative Lippert, Forest Nursery Sale Provisions Modified, Forest Carbon Sequestration Goal Established, Tree Planting Provided. Representative Lippert, would you move that House File 934 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I move House File 934.
And you have an A1 amendment. Could you move the amendment and describe it?
Yes, I move the A1 amendment. This amendment deletes Section 2, Subdivision 1, and replaces it with language that requires the Commissioner of Natural Resources to establish goals for increasing carbon sequestration in public and private forests, identify sustainable forestry practices that increase the ability of forests to sequester carbon, and enhance other ecosystem services like improved soil and water quality. It also fills in the appropriations in the bill, too.
The A1 amendment has been moved. Representative Heintzman, to the A1 amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick question on the Subdivision 1 that was removed. Maybe the amendment author could help us understand, was it because a million trees was too much or too little? What was the issue there?
Representative Lippert.
So this was a bill that first came up in 2019, and last session I worked to further develop this carbon sequestration section. And so we'll be seeking to plant as many trees as possible with funding available. But this asks the department to put goals in place for sequestering carbon in our forests and plans to meet those goals. So it's just a more thought through section related to carbon sequestration in forests.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. All those in favor of the A1 amendment, say aye.
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 Opposed, nay. Ayes have it. The one amendment is adopted. Representative Lippert, to your bill as amended, I see you have a number of testifiers.
I do, Mr. Chair. So I'll talk through the bill quickly and then hand it over to testifiers. House File 934 aims to plant more trees in Minnesota as a response to climate change and also to the devastating impacts that emerald ash borer is already having on the state and will have on our forests. Reforestation or planting more trees is one of the key natural climate solutions we can employ in Minnesota to reduce our net carbon emissions. According to a study recently released by the Nature Conservancy on natural climate solutions in Minnesota, reforestation, planting trees, has a potential to sequester 8 million metric tons of CO2 per year in Minnesota. That's the equivalent of taking two coal-fired power plants offline each year. This bill tasks the Department of Natural Resources with setting a carbon sequestration goal, as mentioned. It's important we put these goals in place and have plans that we are implementing to get to those goals. And these goals are even more important as we prepare for the impact of emerald ash borer. We've heard in multiple committees that Minnesota has a billion ash trees, more than any state in the country, and we're going to lose them. So we need to respond to the need for replanting in our cities and prepare for the loss of ash trees in our forests. This bill is a start. So in this bill, $1.8 million is appropriated for improving seed extraction processes, developing native seeds appropriate to a changing climate and cold storage facilities. $2 million is appropriated to produce container-grown trees for state lands. $300,000 is appropriated in 2022 and 23 to rehabilitate non-productive forest sites. $25,000 is allocated to increase outreach to private landowners. And $400,000 is allocated to provide additional cost-share incentives to private forest landowners. And then $1 million is appropriated in fiscal year 2022 and 23 to work with local units of government on converting ash stands, and $1 million in 2022 and 23 to convert ash forests. So today with me is Forrest Bow and Doug Tilma of the Department of Natural Resources. And I'll turn things over to them.
Mr. Bow with the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Forrest Bow. I'm the Director of Forestry with the Minnesota DNR. I thank Representative Lippert for bringing this bill forward and appreciate the opportunity to testify on it today. Just a few talking points here about the importance of forests and carbon. You know, keeping forest lands as forests is probably one of the most critical things we can do to maintain carbon sequestration that we currently have. Reforesting areas that have been harvested and also planting new forests where they once existed is also a really important strategy. In addition to that, increasing forest productivity, and when I talk about this, this is really increasing the number or the species diversity in some forest sites is important. We have a lot of acres that are not fully stocked, and that increasing forest productivity will be critical. All of these climate strategies are going to need seed or seedlings to do that, to accomplish the increased carbon sequestration. And that increased production of seedlings at the state forest nursery is going to be a huge part of this. It's going to be the building block to help us accomplish our carbon strategies as they pertain to forests. This bill has many similarities to the governor's biennial budget bill and also the governor's bonding proposal that we saw last year. For instance, in Subdivision 2A, talks about improving seed extraction processes, developing seed, native seed appropriate for the climate, and the design and construction of additional cold storage facilities. These improvements are needed to make sure our nursery has the ability to increase our planting and seeding. Those things will certainly help achieve additional carbon sequestration. The modernization, the additional cold storage, both of those items were included in the governor's bonding bill. You may recall that was House File 519 last year. The current facilities lack climate control. They lack the electronic alerts, the monitoring, the reliable temperature regulation, all critical updates to making sure that we have quality seed and seedlings in our stock. The expansion and upgrades to the cold storage facility allow the nursery to lift the seedlings and store more seedlings over season when the field conditions are good, rather than packing and shipping when things aren't quite perfect or maybe even in poor or wet conditions.
Director Bo, I've got to get three more testifiers in 5 minutes.
Okay, I will be quick then, Mr. Chair. Thank you. The bill also talks about containerized seedlings and having that ability to access both bare root and containerized seedlings for reforestation gives us a lot more flexibility than only having access to bare root seedlings. Currently, there's no Minnesota vendor that grows the DNR's containerized seedlings. We have a vendor from Michigan grow some of our seedlings. We also have a lot of acres that are in need of additional stocking. These are acres that can't be commercially harvested. And so in order to increase stocking, we need some dollars to essentially do that work without the use of commercial timber sale as a tool. And then we've certainly come to know that in order to get trees in the ground, one of the biggest things we can do is to help out private landowners by providing a cost share program. That's really critical to making sure more seedlings get in the ground.
Okay, so I'm gonna have to go to the other one. So thank you, Director Bull. Stephanie Pincala, Nature Conservancy, then Craig Johnson, League of Minnesota Cities, and then Forrest Sear, Minnesota Nursery and Landscape Association. And Ms. Pincala.
Thank you, Chairman Hansen and members. My name is Stephanie Pincala, and I work for the Nature Conservancy of Minnesota. If you're not familiar, the Nature Conservancy is an international organization with a mission to conserve the lands and waters on which all life depends. We work to attain that mission here in Minnesota by protecting land and water for the benefit of people and nature. I'm here today to speak in support of the goals in House File 934. As was mentioned, our scientists recently released a report from Minnesota highlighting how natural lands are a tool to help store carbon and mitigate the effects of climate change while also providing benefits for water quality, flood control, soil health, and wildlife habitat, among others. Forests are the number one natural lands tool that the report shows are needed to address climate change in Minnesota. We know our forests are changing. Some tree species will not be suited for the change in climate that we're experiencing. And for that reason, we support accelerating tree planting and reforestation with resilient native species, and know that this bill will also require increased seedling generation to get us there, which this bill all calls for. In addition to reforestation and planting more on public lands, we also support additional efforts to work with private landowners and provide incentives to encourage tree planting. We need to prepare our forests to be resilient to climate change as well as pests, and support ash stand conversion to mitigate the impact of emerald ash borer, especially in our northern forests. As an organization whose work is driven by science, we'd like to see science-based prioritization determine reforestation planting and conversion sites. And in selecting sites, the emphasis should be placed on forest lands that will be most resilient to the effects of climate change. So we think this bill is a step in the right direction and is needed to keep our forests intact, equip forest stands to be resilient for years to come, and more. We thank Representative Lippert for elevating the conversation around this, and look forward to continuing discussions about preparing Minnesota's forests for what's ahead. Thank you.
Mr. Johnson and Mr. Searer, got 1 minute each.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I can be very brief. Craig Johnson with the League of Minnesota Cities. Very much appreciate Representative Lippert bringing this bill forward. Want to say that we strongly support and would echo the urgency you are hearing about what emerald ash borer means to this entire piece of legislation. The state does need to play a bigger role if we're going to be addressing that. And that becomes especially important when we look at setting goals related to climate change, greenhouse gas reduction, carbon sequestration, and stormwater flow reductions, among other things. We are not in a position where we are going to be increasing our benefits in those areas. We're in a situation where unless the state steps up significantly, we are going to see massive decreases in our forest canopy's ability to meet those needs of our climate and our environment. So this is a very important step, both to look at that as we set the goals and to start putting the investment in place to remedy that and mitigate for it. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Mr. Sir.
Yeah, thank you, Chair Hansen, members of the committee. My name is Forrest Sear, and I serve as a Director of Government Affairs at the Minnesota Nursery and Landscape Association, representing garden centers, greenhouses, landscaping companies, and, of course, nursery growers throughout the state. We support the goals outlined in this bill. Planting 1 million trees through 2025 for each year is definitely an admirable goal and one that we hope to partner with the state and with the DNR on. We also support the funding to combat emerald ash borer through converting ash stands to a more diverse and climate-adapted species. However, we do encourage the committee to continue prioritizing partnering with existing tree growing capacity of private nurseries to fulfill the goals of this legislation rather than use money to expand the state nursery. I think it's more efficient that additional money should be put to immediate use with private nurseries to produce that conservation grade seedling product that we know the DNR needs to fulfill the goals of this legislation. MNLA is committed to working with the DNR and the legislature to ensure that any tree planting proposals and RFPs are received by our nursery growers. And I encourage the members of this committee to prioritize partnering with Minnesota's nurseries to accomplish the tree planting goals outlined in this legislation. Thank you.
Thank you. And there are, again, written testimony provided to the committee. Representative Heinzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just wondering if the bill author, Representative Lippert, could help me out. So if I'm reading this correctly, adding it up correctly, we're talking about $8.825 million from the general fund. And, you know, back home, it's a pretty big deal when the tree truck pulls up at the Northland Arboretum in Brainerd and the DNR is there to help distribute tens of thousands of trees. And it's really an important part of reforestation. My question is, is this bill do anything, because the threshold for most people is cost, does this bill do anything to lower the cost for the people that are coming in and reforesting their properties?
Representative Lippert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Heisman. So, there is a focus within the bill on reaching out to private landowners and cost share there, and also just making sure that we're helping the DNR with capacity on conservation grade trees to be able to keep those costs low and to get the capacity up for planting trees in Minnesota.
Representative Heinzman, quickly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a final comment. I would hope that the bill author would like to try to ultimately lower the cost of trees for individuals seeking to secure them with legislation like this and maybe would be open at some point to an amendment. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Lippert, final word.
I just thank the committee for the time. This is just a really important bill. We have to be addressing emerald ash borer and climate change at the same time in Minnesota, and this is a start. So I appreciate the time.
Representative Lippert renews his motion that House File 934, as amended, be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill. The bill is laid over. Members, we have several bills that we've laid over. Where members had questions and concerns, I'd encourage people to work with the authors of the bills to try to make the bills better, and then we can have a good product coming out. Members, we are adjourned.